The religious traditions of India hold a keen interest for John Tatadamanil. They've been life-changing in terms of his research and personal beliefs. John was born in India and raised as a Christian by his parents. They moved to the United States while he was in elementary school. He didn't really give too much thought to non-Christian traditions until he went to college. Recently, I spoke of John about why he places a high value on religious diversity and its impact on his own beliefs. John, tell us a little bit about your own religious upbringing and how your experiences sparked your deep interest in looking at how people of different faiths relate to each other.
Well, I grew up as a Christian in India, as part of one of the churches in India called the Churches of St. Thomas, believed, according to tradition, to have been founded by the Apostle Thomas in AD 52. But I came to the U.S. when I was about 8 and a half. So I grew up Christian in India, which of course is a distinctive thing in India. But when I got here as the child of an immigrant, everyone here was Christian. There was nothing particularly distinctive about being Christian in the U.S. And so I wondered, what is this business of being Indian really mean besides eating this kind of food or, you know, what I can't do because I'm Indian and have to keep to Indian traditions? What does it mean positively to be Indian? And I think this triggered my interest in learning about Indian religions. So my own piety is pretty evangelical. It was a kind of Indian evangelicalism with a prophetic edge. My father and our family prayed every evening in the house, and he meant it every time he prayed. I could tell that he was a person of deep feeling. So his feeling for prayer and God was almost transfused into me. So I've got this very deep, basic Christian sense. But in addition to that deep Christian piety, I have this longing to learn about the traditions of India. And I think that's what explains my work in comparative theology, learning to think about my own tradition, but also in light of the resources and ideas of other traditions.
Did anyone ever question the fact that you were a Christian because you came from a country where there were not that many Christians?
Yeah, I mean, I regularly get questions about when I was converted. And depending on whether the person making such a question is speaking in a way of – in a tone of arrogance or not, I answer differently. But if they seem arrogant, I must confess to mischief, and I say things like, well, while your forefathers were running around naked in the woods of Germany, my great-great-great-grandparents were Christian. So but usually I'm kinder in my response. Most people don't know that Christianity in India is perhaps as old as 2,000 years.
And conversely, though, I guess, are there people from your native country that ever question, even though I know you said your ancestors have been Christian for a long time, are there people that question, why would you be Christian coming from a country with all these other religions?
Well, in my home state of Kerala, where roughly 27% or so are Christian, everyone knows about the presence of Indian Christianity. It's true that over the last, 20 or 30 years, there's been an emergence of a kind of Hindu right wing. And for them, there's a sense that the Abrahamic traditions are foreign religions, and so not appropriately Indian. But this is by no means a majority perspective in India. So in India, I think the diversity of religious traditions is part of the fabric of our lives. And so I don't think there's any particular suspicion about my being Indian and Christian.
When did you start to really explore deeply the Hindu faith?
Well, I think the seeds of this go all the way back to Sunday school. I had in high school an excellent Sunday school teacher who happened to be an uncle of mine, and he had us read Houston Smith's The Religions of Man, subsequently retitled The World's Religions. And I think that was a transformative moment because we studied these traditions with respect and care. I suspect that that was probably my first real introduction, and that was already when I was here. Of course, when you're 8 and a half and in India, you're not going to be thinking about religious diversity, but it's only as I moved into thinking life in around high school age that this interest started really taking shape.
You went to school in Boston, correct?
Yes, undergraduate at Washington University in St. Louis, graduate school at Boston University.
So there, I'm sure that you've met people from much more diverse faiths, correct?
Right. Actually, my first sustained living with somebody of religious difference was in college, where my best friend was Hindu. He, much to my surprise, several years later, said that at that point I was still pretty evangelical, which I find, I guess, true. But he said that I attempted at that point to persuade him that somehow Christianity was intrinsically superior to Hinduism, which pains me a little to think about now in retrospect. But that's about right for an evangelical kid just getting into college. But thinking about the meaning of living with people who were really different but deeply, deeply pious, in whom, as Christians would say, you could see the fruits of the Spirit. I suppose that experience really came in college, where these were my friends, my dearest friends. And the idea that their basic convictions, their way of looking at the world was somehow mistaken did not seem to me viable.
How did that help you mature in your faith, or what type of changes do you feel that you went through?
I think it helped me to realize that there must be deeper ways of thinking about religious difference than my sort of reflexive sense that Christianity was in some way the only way. I think most Christians, even ones who are privileged to grow up in relatively diverse churches like mine with an international background, often don't have a good theological sense of the resources of our own tradition. I don't think I ever heard anybody in my church saying anything like, well, persons from other religious traditions are out of luck. nothing like that was said. But somehow I assumed that something like this must be true growing up in an evangelical milieu. Of course, in many churches, it's explicitly taught that religious difference is somehow a mistake. I'm not really sure how one can make such an argument. And so for many, it's taught to be mandatory. I think living with religious diversity in intimate ways with our neighbors makes us ask deeper questions and then return to our own traditions.
Do you feel that when you did so much of this study, did it give you any doubts about your own faith?
No. I think it enriches faith. For example, as a young evangelical person, it seems to me that we're often led to believe that if we accept a certain set of propositions, believe in Jesus, for example, as a kind of cognitive act, then you will be saved. But if you live with religious difference and see what traditional Christians would speak of as the fruits of the spirits in other people, and you're quite aware that they don't hold the content of the proposition about Jesus as somehow being the Christ in their minds, but are living Christ-like lives, to use very traditional language, you have to do some rethinking. And this rethinking leads you to actually deepen your understanding of your own tradition. What does it mean to be a disciple of Jesus? Does it really mean merely to affirm a set of propositions? And then what do you do with people like Gandhi, a person who was perhaps the deepest disciple of Jesus in the 20th century, but a Hindu disciple who never ceased being Hindu, despite being deeply shaped by the witness of the Sermon on the Mount and the cross? So here you have a kind of sense of learning about your own tradition by seeing how people from other traditions read your tradition. And that's really enriching. That's the kind of work I'm inviting myself and my students to do now, to be taught about their tradition and in some respect perhaps even taught about our own traditions by seeing how other people make sense of them and live with them and learn from them.
Have you given any thought to, with all that's happening on the world stage now, and we have a president who's Christian, but his ancestors came from some other countries. And does this speak to, you know, our image out in the world perhaps now? Is it changing where, because our previous president, you know, was, you know, said he was an evangelical and talked a lot about his faith. And it seems that our current president is trying to reach out more and, as he said, tried to rebuild our image. But is that a good thing?
Yeah, this is a very interesting time. I do think, though, we should say that one of the things that George W. Bush was wonderful about was regularly saying that we are not at war with Islam, visiting mosques, reassuring Muslims immediately after 9/11 that they were not under threat. These were important moves. So I think 9/11 generated a kind of attention to religious difference. And book sales, books about Islam, shot through the roof.
Too,
classes, hiring of faculty at many of our institutions. A tremendous openness. Now I think most of us know that America is the most religiously diverse country in the world. There are more forms of Buddhism present in America than any Buddhist country, which is, you know, typically has only one or two, or in some cases a few more. But we have every form of Buddhism that the planet has by way of immigration here. So it goes with all the world's religious traditions. So in a way, Americans are tremendously blessed by the religious diversity we have here. If we are intentional about learning how to live well with religious difference and do this well, we have much to offer the world. And I think our current president really is aware of these factors and mentioned several religious traditions in his inauguration address, which of course was heartwarming to somebody who teaches religious diversity in the university setting to see Hinduism and Buddhism mentioned explicitly. So I think this is a creative time full of promise in the United States on the question of religious diversity.
And you're teaching classes on Hindu-Christian dialogue and Buddhist-Christian dialogue, correct?
Correct.
What is the reaction of your students?
I think my students know that these issues matter. I like to say to them that, and they know this, but they like hearing it, that people who are religiously diverse are no longer on the other side of the planet, but sometimes on the other side of the bed. And of course, this immediately brings the question home, quite literally home. Our children, our spouses are interested and sometimes devoted to other religious traditions. I went to a conference where people were talking about Jews in the pews, the interreligious marriages in which the partner, say, for example, in this case Jewish, attends the Christian church but doesn't go up to communion. I even heard a poignant story about a young child who said as he was heading up to communion with his mother, "Daddy, why aren't you coming?" Right? Now, this brings the question down not just to the head but to the belly, right? This is how do we negotiate this kind of rich difference in a creative way rather than letting difference become a factor that inhibits deeper relationship. So my students know about these realities. They have to deal with them in terms of their ministerial lives. And they know they need deep intellectual, spiritual resources to wrestle with these questions. So I think my courses are thankfully popular and decisive in terms of the development of my students as they try to think through vital issues. I imagine that most of my ordained students, within 5 to 10 years of graduation, will have to perform an interreligious wedding. Some will go into chaplaincy. And of course, no chaplain, hospital or military, has the luxury of dealing with persons from their tradition alone. So this is the future of Christian ministry.
That is something that has changed over the years. Just in the last 20 years, I'm sure seen a dramatic rise in interfaith marriages. I mean, even back when I was growing up, there were issues about Catholics and Protestants when
got
married, which church they were going to.
And sometimes I think families decide that the tensions around these issues are too deep and an attempt to take the question of religion off the table. Well, that might work for a while, but when the young person grows to a certain age and begins to ask deep questions, then I think the sort of, well, we'll pretend this issue doesn't exist in this family, doesn't become a viable option. So I do think that people are hungry for resources on how to think about these kinds of questions, and we can't avoid them or pretend that they're not there.
So where will you be going with this research?
The questions that I'm really interested in right now are all focused around basically moving us away from one way of thinking about these questions. There is a kind of politically correct, well-meaning, well-intentioned move that suggests that the way to answer the questions about diversity is to say that all these traditions are really paths up the same mountain. While I commend this perspective as at least a creative option, it doesn't seem satisfying to me, because if we're all really up to the same thing, then I have no real reason to be curious about the particularity of the other traditions in all their richness.
What you're saying is if we're all getting to the same place, just different ways, then, yeah, what's the point?
Yeah, what's the point besides making nice, which is – I don't want to understate the importance of making nice with one's neighbor. This is the most basic of Christian commandments, right? Love thy neighbor. But the question is, can that love include a deep yearning? I call it a holy envy, to see what other people know about the holy by way of their language, their practices, their daily lives that I might not know or know as clearly because I only have one particular standpoint that emerges from my own tradition. Might they be seeing something about the divine life that is different but complementary to what I know from my own tradition? It's that question of interesting difference, not difference somehow as necessarily threatening, that I'm interested in now.
Will you be writing a book?
Well, I've already written one on Hindu-Christian dialogue. Now I'm writing about this whole question of how to think about religious diversity from within Christian perspectives. In this book, I'm mapping out the current options on the table and pointing out that most of the options that are on the table right now don't know how to deal well with the question of difference, either because they say that we somehow know all the truth there is to know and other traditions know it partially, or by saying that all of us pretty much get to the same destination. And then, of course, there's the traditional limited position of only my tradition knows the truth. None of these options seems to me adequate. And so I'm trying to articulate this other idea that we might actually have different but complementary insights.
Have you found some theologians of any particular faiths that agree with you on this?
Yeah, I think there are several, but probably a personal hero of mine is the Methodist theologian John Cobb, who has for some time now been hinting in this direction, that mostly through his work in Buddhism and Christianity, that these traditions are pointing at different but complementary truth. He says that when the traditions are likely to be right about what they affirm and wrong about what they deny, and that his work, his challenge, is to take what appear to be contradictory claims, look deeper, and see if something complementary might be found. So he's been sort of a guiding light in this thinking. He's been way ahead of the curve.
Does your forthcoming book have a title?
Religious Diversity After Religion is the provisional title, but the word religion appears too many times. The point of that is to look at and make some sense of the fact that many of the world's traditions don't have a word for religion and don't think of themselves as religions. My suspicion is that this is a problem because we see everything as a religion and we think we know what we mean by that word. I think this is part of the trouble, why we assume that, well, if we're all religions, we must all be doing the same thing. So I'm trying to smoke out what we think a religion is in the first place, trying to make sense of the fact that even Christians haven't really thought until maybe 300 years ago that there were some parts of our lives that were religious and some other parts that were not religious. So there are all kinds of ideas about what we mean by this word that I think is interfering with our conversations with other traditions. And I'm trying to spell them out. My guess is that if we clear up some of our assumptions about what a religion is, we might have more fruitful conversations with other traditions.
Some people look at religion as sort of a downfall, or you're just being taken in by this, or that's why you act this way.
Well, there are multiple ideas about what we think a religion is. And you know, many people have started saying that they're not religious but spiritual. I'm also curious about what that sort of claim implies or means. I think there's a sense that a suspicion about institutions, a suspicion about doctrines, and a sense that we need to get back to practice, basic practices that transform our lives. I'm deeply sympathetic to those inclinations. But I just want to remind us all that the very idea that we're saved by any particular religion itself is a weird sort of notion. Wilfred Cantwell Smith, another hero of mine, reminds us that we can only be saved by God, not by Christianity. And I think what he's talking about is the way in which we start talking about our devotion to our religion rather than our devotion to God, already a sign that something's wrong.
Is there a timetable for your book yet?
Well, I hope to finish by the end of the summer. Of course, then it has to go through the publication process and external reviews. So hopefully in about a year and a half or so, it'll...
It's about 2010,
2000. Right, 2010 or thereabouts. I hope it will see the light of day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
For more about John Tatamanil, Assistant Professor of Theology at Vanderbilt, click on the Vanderbilt View at www.vanderbilt.edu/Vanderbilt View. For Interview, I'm Amory Dear Owens.